I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Sort of already been answered in a disturbing way, but the thing about Squid Game is that they did such a good job of making the games look just fun enough that you're excited about the next one, and you kind of have that vicarious feeling of like,
I could do this.
Yeah, exactly. How long would I survive in this one? This one actually looks enjoyable enough that I would, try to get through it or whatever. They're not just depressing and harrowing the whole time. And I was immediately like, how long before someone completely misses the point and creates a game show that is just non-lethal versions of Squid Game?
Yeah, it's already happened.
And somebody literally already fucking did it on YouTube.
North Carolina's finest Mr. Fucking Beast.
Yeah.
Slinging burgers and missing the point of anti-capitalist propaganda.
I got the feeling a lot of people missed the point of that show.
Absolutely. There's right-wingers all over Twitter who's like, actually, it's a critique of communism. It's like, in what fucking way? The episode where they go back to capitalist society is called Hell.
Yeah, no, it's just like, no, that doesn't work. Anyway, yeah, go back. What was your point, Alex? Or did you make your point?
That's it. It's just that the entire thesis of the show is that this is a disgusting representation of how a capitalist system just like fucks you out of your life, your livelihood, drains away everything and makes just sort of an absurdist children's game type parody out of the struggle of our lives. And someone's
what
like,
if we did it for real.
But wait, but what if we do this and make it fun though? Oh yeah.
Just be like crazy. Exactly.
And people still win money, of course. I mean, they gotta be playing for money.
Wouldn't it be crazy if like a system based on competing for money actually killed people?
I don't know what it was about that. That reminded me of the story behind Sharknado and how the lead, I forget the guy's name, Ian Ziering, I believe is his name.
Oh yeah, Ian Ziering.
Thank you. Yeah.
He did not like Sharknado being brought up.
But part of the reason why he took the role was because he needed health insurance for his family.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, how many times can you laugh about that movie after knowing that fact? It's like, well, I can't even laugh at how bad this movie is.
I know, but I can kind of a little bit because it's Sharknado.
It is ridiculous.
Like, that's one thing. It's like John Q, but he's showing up on set, and they're like, so this is when the Sharknado hits.
Plus, now he's extra mad because he's like, wait, I fucking hate my family, and everyone just wants to talk about Sharknado, so my personal and business lives are both ruined.
I did this to get my kid Adderall.
Should have never gotten that health insurance. Are we ready to do this?
Let's do it.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Goat Season. We are so happy to have you with us, listeners. This is a podcast about the greatest individual seasons of television of all time, their most memorable episodes, and their creative teams both in front of and behind the camera. I'm Phil Mitchell, and along with me is recently separated conjoined twin, Alex Sanessi.
Call me Gabriel, y'all.
Also known as Gabriel. I like that one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And today is a special day. for our Goat Season listeners, this is our first ever pod recording where we've got a guest host with us today. Yeah, this is good.
Yes.
Good stuff. Today we have with us Mr. Josh Sullivan. Josh, welcome to the pod, man.
Hey, yeah. Thank you.
He doesn't just do our intro music. He is also
he does the outro music.
He does not do the outro music, actually. He's also a multi-talented screenwriter, director. He's written a ton of huge commercials. He does treatments for marketing campaigns. He's got music videos. Actually, you have a music video coming out probably around the same time as this podcast, right?
Oh, hopefully, right?
Yeah, dude.
For Moray?
Yeah. You want to...
There's a good rapper from Fayetteville, just got off tour with J. Cole named Moray.
Nice.
We went up and made a video for him, and should be coming out soon.
Cool.
But this comes out December 6th, so...
Oh, well, I hope so, right?
Out, yeah,
okay.
Right? Yeah.
Who knows how these things
work. What's the name of the video?
It is called Ticket.
Ticket.
All right.
Ticket.
Nice. I'm going to be looking for that.
Ticket by Moray.
All right.
Gotta get my ticket.
I'm going to be looking for that on the tubes.
And I'm the guy who took the boobs out of the GoDaddy commercials, so you can thank me for that.
Oh, hell yeah. Dude.
Dude, thank you so much. Thank you. No, I'm just kidding.
Fucking national hero here.
Yeah. I was like, I'm tired of seeing this shit with my family. I've never done a GoDaddy commercial.
Okay.
Well, thanks for having me, y'all.
Yeah.
Dude, thanks for coming
on. We are so glad to have you be with us today. We're going to be talking about episodes 3 and 4. Or is it 2 or 3 or 3 or 4? How do you?
It's nebulous because technically the pilot is one unit, but they split it up into two episodes for the rebroadcast.
So we're going to go with 3 and 4 today. We're talking about episode 3, Tabula Rasa, and episode 4, Walkabout. This was my first impression because we've had discussions about what would it be like to have 2 episodes in a row that were pretty good.
Yeah.
And I think this is the first batch. I think that's pretty good. Episode 3 is pretty good, and I think episode 4 is outstanding.
Episode 3 is serviceable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, along the lines of the pattern we've seen so far, episode 3's quality is in relative proportion to episode 4, but...
True.
Episode 4 is so good.
It's not.
That yeah. episode 3 being solid makes it seem a little lesser than. But I
Absolutely.
Remember at the time thinking it was totally good. I mean... It introduced the whole idea of the flashbacks when it mm-hmm. started. So it still had that little bit of intrigue of like, oh, this is going to be the structure. We're going to jump back to the real world, you know, from the island.
Yeah.
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 As somebody who's, that's his least favorite part of the show, I was like, all right.
So you're not a fan of the flashbacks?
No.
Okay.
Listen, I'm of the... This is terrible for y'all's podcast, but I'm of the opinion that every TV show should just be a fucking movie.
all right, okay.
Not all of them, you know. Uh-huh. You got your. I bet
you don't want 90 Day Fiancé to be a movie.
Fuck no, man.
You don't want your favorite episode to be adapted.
Each episode of 90 Day Fiancé is an hour and a half. I am good. Keep it going. We're having fun.
Oh, so they're already feature films.
Exactly,
that's what
you're saying. And they're great. And the star power.
Yeah,
oh
yeah.
Man. I'm so there when you're like rapping. Hey, we'll get into it. But Walkabout's flashbacks absolutely work, absolutely bolster the story. I feel like sometimes it feels like they're treading water with these flashbacks.
I agree. Yeah. Yeah, sometimes it does feel like the flashback is more filler and less... It doesn't really say as much about the character as much as it is just trying to like, okay, well now we have, instead of 35 minutes, now we have like a full 45 minutes of television or film just to put on the screen. Yeah, I can definitely relate.
You could maybe say about Kate's flashback that it really only needed to be one scene. Like, it's basically one decision that she makes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess you get the emotional backstory to that decision, which is nice, but you could easily take that out and still get everything that they were saying about her character with one piece. And so the beginning of the flashback is fairly, like, slow. But we should probably do the recap before we get deep.
Yeah, we probably should. Tabula Rasa, that's a pretty straightforward episode. And so it kind of focuses on the theme of fresh starts and starting over and in some ways avoiding one's past to a certain degree. Every character who has survived the crash is like a blank slate. And there's opportunity to transform yourself from, you know, who you were in the past. Maybe you were Dick Whitman and now you're Don Draper on the other side of the crash. You can be whoever it is that you want to be. So in the flashback timeline...
Spoiling another TV show.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Dude, no. I don't even care. If you don't know that Don Draper is Dick Whitman, just get out of here. You shouldn't be listening to this podcast.
All right, later.
He pulls his ear pod out and he's gone.
I was telling Alex, I was like, I don't know why you want me on. I do not watch TV shows.
We're going to talk about that whole guest process when we get to the second episode here. It's fascinating, listeners. There are twists and turns just to Josh becoming a guest on this that I was not privy to.
So, what, in the flashback timeline, Kate, she shows up in Australia. She decides to work for a farmer who's down on his luck. She seems itinerant. No one knows why she's there, the reasons that, you know, she is picking up work with this guy. 3 months later, she decides to leave. The farmer, however, has discovered that she's a wanted woman and then turns her into the authorities, specifically the U.S. Marshal. His name is Edward Mars, which I thought was funny. He's played by Frederick Lane. In the current timeline, the transmission expedition in the last half of the pilot, they come back to the survivors and decide to lie about the long-running French transmission, the French recording. And then meanwhile, the critically wounded Edward Mars tells Jack that Kate is a fugitive and that she shouldn't be trusted. Jack's trying to keep the man alive. Kate is thinking about killing the guy, but eventually she chooses not to, and she has Sawyer provide the worst botched mercy killing of all time that results in Jack having to put Mars out of his misery. And then the episode ends with Jack declining to know sort of Kate's backstory and instead just accepting her as she is. Yeah.
I really love Jack's grumpy reaction to having to mercy kill that guy.
Yeah. It's so salty.
That's the best moment of the episode.
It really is. It's great. We might as well just hop into that. I thought it was great because it comes right after Sawyer is just chest pounding so hard. And he's just like, you can't do this. You don't know how to get it done. Blah, 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 blah. And then you just hear the guy just gurgling to his death.
It's disgusting.
Slowly. It's so gross and so gnarly. Yeah,
they,
and then
they play
Jack
perfectly. Hurley bounces off of it and just is like, oh no. And like, that's they're kind of tipping your hat. They're like, you can laugh at this. Like, that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, really well constructed.
Yeah, it immediately cuts Sawyer down to size where it's like his machismo is going to be subverted on this show. Mm-hmm. And he has these moments too of just like horror following that where he's so freaked out by the fact that he screwed this up. And you're like, there's something more going on with this guy, right?
Yeah, he's very disturbed by it.
He's kind of like grabbing a chance that they barely gave him in this episode to perform a little extra, you know?
Yeah. What did you think about the scene where Jack and Sawyer first kind of confront each other in the fuselage?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Sawyer is still very one-dimensional at this point. I feel like it's really not until we get to his origin episode that they start to open him up as a character and give him those extra dimensions. Right now, he's such an obstacle to Jack, and the show is still telegraphing that we're supposed to be completely on Jack's side through all of this. It's just the show, as usual, taking a character who's potentially interesting like Sawyer and sort of shunting him off into a role where he's only like propping up Jack's heroism.
Right. They're writing off his magnetism lot with that portrayal. Because like, I don't find Jack that magnetic. He kind of is like a cipher to me for the most part. His role mostly is people walk up and ask him a question.
We love to hear this, Josh. Mm-hmm. We're glad you're on our side with this one.
Right.
He's just always doing his own thing. He's like moving some piece of junk and somebody walks up and they're like, hey, you're a doctor. Do you know anything about like depression? And he's like, fuck off. Like,
yes.
Not right now, please.
Yeah.
He's got a human head in his hand trying to
come back next time.
And they're like, hey, my tummy hurts.
He just seems bothered most of the time.
Because he literally is.
Just
they're
inconvenienced. Yeah, he is. Yeah,
that's
they
why
really
don't
are.
Become a doctor because everybody assumes that you're like top dog.
Something I'll call attention to in this episode that I thought was really fun was just every character still has so many injuries from the crash in the pilot. I mean, the most obvious one is the marshal who has this giant, awesome wound on the side.
And that one lady with the pregnancy. She's pregnant.
Yeah, really. She really got fucked up in that crash.
This island's a little weird.
She's going to have a, like, 737 baby. Little baby with like little turbines under his arms.
Oh my god. Yeah, dude.
But no, I just mean like Locke, he still has the cut over his eye. Jack has like these double scratches on his cheek that look kind of cool. And just everybody is still has open wounds from the day before. And it so places you in that moment. And it also takes you out for the flashbacks where Kate is looking comparatively pristine. And I don't know, I just, I feel like I miss that from a lot of shows and movies these days. I feel like characters aren't as often really, like, bloodied and cut up.
Everybody is Wolverine in long-form media.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. They just have, like, a cut in one episode, and then it's a scar an episode later, and then it's gone.
Yeah, and then it's gone, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. I just like that. I like how it centers us in this moment, and it shows us that not a lot of time has passed on the show so far. It's pretty gradual, temporally, right?
We're also blessed that every day they state what day it is. They're like, we've been out here for 4 days.
Yeah,
we're
so blessed to hear that, yes. Absolutely.
Right. I'd be lost if they didn't say that.
Oh.
I'm sorry.
Your invitation back has been withdrawn.
All right, goodbye.
Yeah, that's been rescinded.
Right. It's been revoked, like diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, it's that's got been really good. Definitely not diminishing returns on that joke.
Right. I guess we could talk too about Damon Lindelof, since he's the sole credited writer on this episode. Yeah. We talked about him a little bit on the pilot episode, but I mean, there's so much to get into with this fucking guy.
Yeah, of course.
I feel like he is the singular point to which all of the fan enmity and also love, just it all goes back to this one dude.
It does. Undeservedly so. But
undeservedly, sure. He brought it on himself to an extent, I think, just in that he definitely consolidated power as a showrunner very quickly around himself from this initial brain trust of writers in season one. But he's still responsible for all the big moments in this season, for all the big character stuff. So, you know, we got to give him props there. Basically, he started his career as a script reader, going through the slush pile at Paramount and Fox. His first job was on a Kevin Williamson drama for ABC. It was called Wasteland. Mm-hmm. It was canceled after like 3 episodes, though.
Okay.
That year, he also worked on MTV's Undressed, along with Jennifer Johnson, who's one of the...
Oh, yeah. She's one of the writers of the later episodes. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. But his first big job was on Nash Bridges, and he joined that show in its last 2 seasons, which was run by Carlton Cuse.
Oh, okay.
Of course, we know he's a huge figure in Lost.
Right.
He becomes the co-showrunner about midway through this season. That definitely seems like a case of Lindelof being like, JJ is being pulled in so many different directions. I need a solid TV guy to help me, like, hold down the fort. And also to sort of strengthen my position as the creative head of the series. And that's when he brings in his buddy Cuse.
Okay. Is Nash Bridges, is that Don Johnson?
Yeah, it's Don Johnson and Cheech Marin.
That's right.
Oh, they're doing that USA reboot movie.
Right. Yeah. Right.
Okay.
They're bringing them both back, aren't they?
Yeah, because everybody's been fucking clamoring for it.
Yeah.
Okay. In Knives Out and in Watchmen, yeah, loved him in both of those productions. Yeah, he's fantastic. Anyway, go ahead, Alex.
So basically, he originally was brought onto the show by Lloyd Braun because Braun hated the initial script by Jeff Lieber, and JJ came in with a pitch that he liked way better. But immediately, Braun was like, "No, I need a guy who's on the writing staff constantly, generating and also like writing these scripts out," where Abrams seems like more of an idea guy.
He is
more throws a bunch of stuff out and other people
then he dips out, picks up the pieces.
Yeah.
And this is really what it is. Yeah.
And then he comes back and he's like, "Here, I'll end it." And then he fucking shits in front of the camera.
Sometimes.
Rise of Skywalker.
So when has he ended anything well?
Oh boy.
Sometimes. Give me one solid example.
I think the answer
end
is
of
zero.
Star Trek 2009.
Can you count Star Trek back in 2009? Because like it's just one movie.
No, yeah, you can end.
You can't count that.
You can't count ending one movie. All right.
I think you and I are in the minority of people who like both of those movies.
I like Into Darkness a lot too.
Oh, you okay? I wasn't as high on that one. I did prefer the first one.
Sure. Oh, the first one's definitely
the Craft.
Better, but
I think
I don't hate Into Darkness.
Yeah, I don't hate Into Darkness either. Yeah, a lot of people really don't like it, but yeah.
Yeah, so Lloyd Braun brought Lindelof in for a meeting with Abrams. They immediately hit it off because Lindelof was wearing a Bantha Tracks t-shirt the meeting. So they
I'm a grown man.
Immediately like bonded over their Star Wars fandom
and their Arrested Development.
Yes. And then, you know, Lindelof was basically, he was on Lost, and that just absolutely consumed him for its entire run. There's a really good interview with him on the Dead Eyes podcast. I don't know if you guys have heard about it.
Yeah, you told me.
You might have mentioned it.
It's a podcast by this guy. He's an actor and comedian, Connor Ratliff. It's about him getting fired off of Band of Brothers post-audition. He was basically, like, cast, and then the episode director, who was Tom Hanks, came in and fired him.
Oh, I heard it. I have heard about
the
this. Yeah.
About mm-hmm. it is that Tom Hanks apparently said that he had dead eyes. Mm-hmm. So that's where the podcast name comes from. Mm-hmm. And it kind of fucked him up for a while.
For a long
because
time.
Because he was just like, yeah, America's dad just told me that I'm shit. So, like, literally everyone is not on my side.
Like, preferably.
Yeah.
Like, genetically flawed.
Yeah. But it's a great podcast. It's really interesting in how it just covers industry disappointment and how difficult it is when your entire sense of self and self-worth is wrapped up in your profession in this, like, very personal way, too, where it's like, as an actor or as a writer, being rejected is literally someone telling you, I don't like all of the you that's coming into this.
Right.
They're essentially saying, excavate everything about yourself and your personality, and then we might have something. Mm-hmm. So Lindelof came on and was really great, really candid, just sort of about the difficulty he had with the fan reaction, particularly to the end of the show, and just how the show was like this freight train. He describes it as the world's fastest treadmill, and if you slow down your jogging for 1 minute, someone screams in your ear.
Oof.
That's how he describes the process of writing Lost, especially in the beginning.
That sounds terrifying.
You would think by now that we would have figured out a good way to do things and, like, better timetables for things.
Mm-hmm.
In every aspect of the industry, you are rushing all the time.
Mm.
No matter what level you move up to. You can hit this level where it's like, you know, you're making Dune and you're like, well, I'm going to take, like, 4 years to do this. And they're like, okay, that's cool.
TV is so different, though, man.
It is.
Especially this particular show,
which
was greenlit by an executive on his way out the door. And so I feel like Lindelof and everyone else was like, well, this is a dream job, you know? This is me getting to bring in all of my favorite comic book writers and all of the people I enjoy working with to be on this, like, amazing science fiction fantasy sandbox where I can do literally anything I want. And then he got there and was just like, oh,
to do
no,
anything.
We have no time. We have no time to plan this shit out. Yeah. So I definitely felt some sympathy for him there. And he talked also about how creating The Leftovers afterward was definitely a response to people's reaction to the end
of
Lost.
Fine, I'll make something that no one watches.
but that everybody pretty much loves.
Yeah.
Anyone who has seen that show considers it
one
of HBO's best. Probably one of the best of all time.
I always hear, like, you gotta see the final season. I'm like, what?
What do you mean? Like, final season? There's more than one season this I have to watch? Oh my god. John just put off my entire... Like, idea of TV.
Yeah, you gotta put up with 80 hours of being bored out of your skull, but there's like five really good hours in there.
The Leftovers is great. It's the good kind of boring. That's how I'll put it. No, but it is totally a show that you could see stemmed out of his sort of postpartum depression. And probably also his smarting to the negative backlash that was coming at him from his film work, because as we recently mentioned, he went on to Star Trek Into Darkness, which was hated, and he also wrote on Prometheus, and
that's right.
I feel like that was peak Lindelof hate, was people saw his name in the credits, and they said, that's every problem that I have with this movie, and for me, personally, that's where I turned around.
Really?
I really like that movie.
You like Prometheus? Weirdly, because I thought, I remember we hated it. Okay, so Josh likes it. You're saying
Josh
you hate
it. I don't like
Prometheus, okay.
But I think the problems with that movie stem from Ridley Scott and from the initial conception of it.
Yeah.
Because for one thing, Ridley Scott was changing shit on the fly the entire way through.
Even during the ad campaigns.
Oh, yeah. And he cut that movie to ribbons, too. It was supposed to be over 2.5 hours, and it's like under 2 hours.
I wouldn't agree.
You can feel the missing pieces very easily. But the thing that really got me on Lindelof's side is that I read the original Prometheus script by John Spates, who is like one of the biggest like hot shit science fiction writers in Hollywood right now. And his script, which was called Alien Origins, is basically every shitty alien fan script I've ever fucking read. It is so by the numbers, evil android, facehuggers popping out of eggs, who has an alien inside of them. It's totally boilerplate.
Yeah.
What Lindelof came and added to it was David's character.
Brilliant.
Charlize's character. Fine. Like, basically, all of the...
I know I'm in the minority. I think that movie fucking rocks.
Yeah, exactly.
That is a good horror movie that is got a lot of interesting philosophical discussions. It's a...
Oh, look at my face.
Listen, y'all.
Interesting philosophical.
Every time I throw on Prometheus.
Oh, you said
in.
Every I time like... you throw on Prometheus, man. Every that's time, that's dedication there, Josh. I think
that triggered me too.
I've thrown on Prometheus a total of 0 times. I watched it once in the theater.
Throw it on. It ages well. It ages.
I might believe you.
It is
on that one. Okay. All right. I might buy that.
But the casting is still horrible.
Yeah.
All over the place. There's so many like weird ass performances.
I like not Tom Hardy.
I mean, he's just so distracting.
That's the thing, though. You're just like, is he Tom Hardy or not?
Tom Hardy. Right. You're like, did Tom Hardy lose?
It's
a
like the guy. It's like, yeah, what we were talking about last time, Alec, the guy who plays Sarah Snook's lover in Succession, and we're like, this guy looks like Jake Gyllenhaal. He's like poor man's Jake Gyllenhaal.
He looks way too much like Jake Gyllenhaal without being Jake Gyllenhaal.
Exactly, it's very distracting.
Wham's Games?
No, not Wham's Games.
The guy,
the dickhead. Yeah,
the dickhead on the campaign.
His name
trail.
Is Ashley. I forget his last name. Ashley something.
Oh, I'm already out.
Yeah, a guy named Ashley. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but he looks so much like Gyllenhaal. You're just like, what is going on here?
Looks like BJ Novak deep faking Jake Gyllenhaal onto his face.
That's what he looks like. I'm saying is, y'all are having to reach deep in the bag to find something to not like about Prometheus right now. I'm kidding.
All right. Yeah, that's fair.
I like everything he brings to it. I think Lindelof has a lot on his mind, and people don't really know how to take that from a mainstream writer. Like, he is fine with philosophical digressions. He is fine with murky morality. And he's fine with ruining Brad Bird's perfect record.
And we're back into the shit talking. Before we get off that, just one more thing about Prometheus, real quick, though. So the thing about John Spates is, basically, when the critical and fan reaction to Prometheus was getting a little, like, backlashy, when people were starting to come out negative on that movie, basically, Scott and co. tried to divorce Lindelof from the final product as much as they could, and they brought Spates back in and had him be the writer in all of the press kits about the movie, and they like invited him to set, and they basically like rolled out the red carpet for this guy who wrote this crappy script that was totally rewritten by Lindelof into something interesting. And Spates got a giant career boost off that. I mean, he essentially started his career in mainstream blockbusters because of that. And he also throws Lindelof under the bus on all of the special features. He has all this stuff where he's like, you know, I thought my script was great, and then somebody rewrote me, and he rolls his eyes. And I'm just like, man, fuck this guy, dude. Oof. He knows that everyone hates Lindelof anyway, and he's just like taking such an easy shot at him, you
Jeez.
Know?
Wow.
But nobody's blaming Walter Hill, who produced it.
Walter Hill?
That's Walter the guy Hill we need to talk about.
Producer behind Alien.
Yeah.
He's a director, too. He's like, he hasn't been involved with that franchise since the 70s.
So John Spates, he did, was he the original scribe of Passengers? Because that was a blacklist script.
Yes.
So that was him.
That was his claim to fame, is that they went back and grabbed his blacklist script for Passengers and totally fucked it up. And then he had another occasion to be like, well, I wrote a good script. And then
they ruined
it.
Well, they did. Yeah. So he did Dune. Yeah. He did Dune with Roth, right?
Roth rewrote him on Dune.
Right. Well, yeah. I think the copy of the script I have is Eric Roth's. And like that one is, it's solid, you know.
It is.
He wrote Doctor Strange, which is a mostly insufferable movie. And he wrote The Darkest Hour.
The Emil Hirsch, like, Russian tax shelter movie?
Yeah. The thing. You see these fuckers. They make these terrible, like, scripts. And they get elevated to the highest planes, you know. He gets to live off Dune for the rest of his damn life.
Yeah.
Who can I fault? Like, you wrote a script, people like it, like, whatever.
Right.
It's more that he threw Lindelof under the bus while Lindelof was already on his way down.
Yeah.
Lindelof
and
got fucked on that.
He's such an easy target in that way. And this guy really didn't add anything that people like about that movie.
I'm not wrong that Lindelof was the showrunner on Watchmen, right?
Yeah, he was.
And again, I think the ending of that show left me a little cold. Mm. But what he did, and he went in there, is like he's got so much more on his mind than the average Hollywood writer,
right?
And he goes deep in the weeds on it, and like I don't know, you kind of have to admire it, even though I don't love everything he's done.
Yeah. Watchmen is totally like the climax of his redemption arc.
Yeah, I would agree.
Watchmen
yeah.
is him finally coming in with something that everybody loves and that a lot of people actually watch. And
yep.
I think people could finally be like, all right, maybe we got it wrong about this guy.
Exactly.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Yeah.
I guess as far as other things about the episode, I feel like we covered most of this one. I would just say tabula rasa, of course, is the philosophical concept put out there by John Locke. So,
yeah.
It's a nice subtle segue into the Locke episode, just in the title there.
It is.
It's referencing the philosopher who came up with the whole idea of self and
yeah.
Determinism from birth and all that. Yeah, just thought I'd put on my fedora and throw that out there.
Jesus. Just, this podcast is over. No. What about Kate?
Oh, that's a great question.
Come on, guy. The main character. Yeah, exactly.
I know that's what I thought you were doing.
Like,
I groaned and rolled my eyes when Jack was like, "You can't seem to stay in one place for too long." Mm-hmm. It's like, dude, it's been 3 days.
Exactly.
Saying this shit.
Chill yourself, like, man. Exactly.
Did you see her flashback?
Exactly.
Hey, I saw that flashback of yours. I gotta say, I'm not that happy.
So, I mean, we might as well just get it, talk about Kate and then talk about like Evangeline Lilly as well. The character of Kate, because we've talked about this before, it's weird. It's one of those characters where I feel like this is a character that could have been interesting and then was just like underserved for the remainder of the show, which is really unfortunate because I was doing some research and found out that Kate was supposed to be one of the leaders of the packs of Losties on the island, but they kept Jack on for the remainder of the show and had Jack be the leader and sort of have Locke be another leader. But Kate was sort of like demoted to being sidekick, which sucks because I think that she would have been a much more compelling lead. And I think Evangeline could have possibly carried that. She would have been a much more compelling character moving forward than having Jack the Doctor and Matthew Fox at the forefront.
I don't think there's a lot of subtlety in her performance, to be totally honest. There is an intrigue there. You know, I just think, I think she's head and shoulders above Matthew Fox's performance. Like,
interesting.
I think there is a bit of mystery there, but there's not a ton of subtlety. And not heads and shoulders, maybe a shoulder.
Okay.
She's got one shoulder.
She's got one shoulder, okay.
But I don't think, just from rewatching these episodes, like, I don't think you can really fault them putting Locke at the forefront.
No.
I think that's by far the most interesting character that they have.
Yeah, for certain.
She is putting in work, and there is this sort of, like, star quality to her just right when you see her. Like, mm-hmm. you're like, oh, this person's meant to be on the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think your wife put it really well when we were watching the episode last night that she's, like, she's incredibly beautiful. She's also very cute, but she also looks like a normal person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then that makes her so, like, both accessible and magnetic.
If I saw Sawyer in real life, I'd be like, okay, like, where's the camera?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know? Am
right.
I getting punked right now by this hot yeah. man?
But Kate, on the other hand, yeah.
She, I think Maria said she could be the hottest bartender in any small town.
Yeah.
You know? Which I, it's coming from a woman, so we're allowed to say it.
As opposed to all of the unacceptable thoughts that I
yeah,
have.
Yeah, just right. shut that down, dude. Just keep it in the box.
Yeah, I know she didn't call her cute. That's an Alex.
Oh, yeah. Alex is all about Evangeline. He can't stop. So she's yeah. Canadian. She's a Canadian actress who was first scouted as a model, did some commercial work. She had some small roles in, like, Smallville, True Calling. small role in Freddy versus Jason. She landed Lost. She's like 25 years old. And so I think she was on the show until her early 30s. But yeah, she is ridiculously young. And like I said, the role of Kate was supposed to be much meatier. It was supposed to have a lot more to it. And eventually they kind of pared that down to make more room for Jack, who was, again, supposed to have died in the pilot.
They did give her one cool thing in her backstory, though, I found out, which was that she originally was supposed to have Rose's backstory.
Right,
her backstory
right.
was supposed to be that her husband died in the tail section of the plane, and she was on the island alone now, like, restarting. And they instead gave her the backstory of her being on the run as a fugitive, which...
By way of a printed out mugshot, which I thought was so stupid. Hey, well, I gotta take her across seas. Before I do that, I need a printout.
It's totally one of those, like, library printouts where they use the lowest amount of ink setting to, and you're like, how did this survive a plane crash and be totally legible? Yeah. Like, come on. And she looks so good in that mugshot.
Oh, God. All right, just stop it, Alex. Just stop it. Just quit it. Dude, like, you're already... No, you're doing it already.
Her hair is perfect.
No, just stop it. Just stop it. Calm down. Keep your pants on.
I'm just saying.
God.
Why are you foaming at the mouth?
Dude, it's so dilated. Dude, you need a drink of water right now? Good grief. But the thing that I think is interesting about Lily is the fact that out of all of the actors on the show, she's the one who's got the longest and the largest amount of staying power. Like, she got wrapped up into Peter Jackson's Hobbit trilogy. Whatever you think about those, it's besides the point. She got paid. And then she is the Wasp in Marvel's MCU. So she's having the career I thought Josh Holloway would have.
I mean, for sure. She was another person who said she was retiring after the end of Lost. Most of the people who worked on Lost either retired from TV or movies or both by the end of it. So it just does not seem like anyone was a happy camper
6 years
by the time the show was finished. But that aside, I think, yeah, it's probably a great lane for her. She's getting paid extremely well. And also, I feel like those movies are so hermetically sealed in terms of their production that it's not like she's out in the world constantly, like, fending off, you know, paparazzi and stuff. She can kind of keep things low-key when she's not battling Loki. So bad.
I wish you would be hermetically sealed.
Which I was just suffocating in a Ziploc bag right now.
Yeah, I wish you were one of those bodies at the beginning of Sicario.
Just in a bag.
Just wall insulation.
Yeah. Who's got Alex in his bag? Oh, hold up, guys. A 1-800 number is calling. I'm just kidding.
I need to take this. So, you both, and I think we're all big fans of Walkabout, correct? It's the standout episode of the first season?
Yeah. Yes.
Are we in agreement of that?
I would say so.
Standout episode of the show.
Of the show. Okay. Okay.
And I've only seen that episode.
It is absolutely the best example of the initial flashback structure of this show. Before they had to switch up the formula, this was the one that totally sold us on the idea of, oh, we're going to discover something amazing about these characters. And that being said, Josh was so excited to be on this podcast. We did a bunch of scheduling shenanigans to flop things around and get him on it. And then he and I started watching Walkabout last night, and I made a small inference to the big twist in the episode, and Josh was like, what are you talking about?
Oh,
you remember
really?
The twist
oh, wow.
on the episode
he requested. Oh, that's so great.
Oh, we were watching that Nicholas Rogue movie.
And I was like, wait a minute, why did you pick this one?
And listen, because I'm a slave to think pieces, and I heard that Walkabout was a great episode. I gotta hop in there and see what BuzzFeed was talking about. My Watch Mojo list really sent me this way.
Wow.
No. I will say this. Yes, Alex was laughing the entire episode because I had no idea what was going on.
I'm just so glad that I didn't offhand reveal the twist at any point in us talking.
Yeah,
I don't know how
you
I did
started
that.
Up and you're like, oh, that's fun. You think he's just looking for his shoes. I'm like, what's he looking for?
Oh.
I'm like, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
I was thinking the whole time, I was like, is this a Dunkirk thing? Like, is he stealing shoes off bodies? Like, are those not his gold tip socks?
He requested this episode, y'all. Yo. Oh my god.
You want to know why? Because I super didn't want to watch a lot before the episode that I had to watch.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I'm a smart That's well man. Done.
Well, so it was actually really fun because last night I got to see the twist work on him in real time.
Yeah,
and
that's
was
magic.
One of those things where I would say Josh, being naturally a skeptic of TV structure and TV storytelling, I saw you like totally perk up when that moment hit again and be like, "Oh wait, no, this is real.
Yeah.
This is
our well, real. And because they're yeah. like, he's like my condition. And I'm like, is it like ED? Like, is he like? I'm pretty sure you can still do a walkabout. You know, if you're a little limp, I didn't know he's that limp. I'm sorry. I actually think that's not PC. So feel free to cut that one out.
Oh no, that's staying.
It's staying in.
Okay, but yeah, I really liked it. I was not entirely held by the second or third episode. And then this one, it's like, it's like, there's something going on. There's something just magnetic. And it's because they got a real secret they're hiding. Like, oh, Kate was on the run from authorities. It's like, you know what? That's not, I don't know anything about this person. So I don't have any assumptions about her. I assume that Locke can fucking walk.
Mm-hmm.
They played it so well.
They did.
Well, that's the thing. We see that all through the first season of some characters essentially had all of their backstory filled in in the pilot by their behavior. Mm-hmm. And others, it's like, we don't know anything about this guy and he's fascinating and they're just full of mysteries. And their flashbacks totally work dependent on that, you know? Some of them is just killing time of like, oh, yeah, here's how Charlie got hooked on drugs. He was a rock star. Wait, we already knew that. What's the point? You know? And then you have others like Sawyer, where he's just filled with all sorts of intriguing contradictions, and anything you learn about him only opens the door to more complications, essentially. And Locke is the same way. Because it's like, is this guy a weekend warrior? Is he a skinhead? Is he some kind of a fucking weirdo? Like, you really don't know if he's a creep or not.
Yeah, yeah.
Up until, like, this episode. And even after.
Even after, it's still like, I don't know how to read this guy.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's an interesting episode. So what? I mean, we might as well just summarize it. It's one of the best episodes of Lost, I think, of all time. And so, I mean, just right off the bat, John Locke, he awakens immediately after the crash. He smiles at his foot when he sees himself able to wiggle it. It seems very innocuous at the moment, until the reveal, which is fantastic. We're going to reveal this, right? We're spoiling this, right? Of course,
Oh, I already did.
Oh, wait, that's right. You did. So what is it? The Losties are trying to gather themselves to collect themselves. They find out that there's boar that are on the island, and Locke just shows up and he's like, hey, I can catch these boar, I can hunt these animals, and I can bring them back, and they're going to be our sustenance moving forward. And it's so convincing because he shows up, he's like thrown a knife at Sawyer's head, and he's like wearing like all of this like hunting gear, and he shows off all of his knives, and he looks like a total badass, cool, calm, collected. And then the flashbacks just basically show you that that's not who this guy was. He was a corporate peon. His boss like berated him and made fun of him all of the time.
His boss, who looks like the lead singer of Incubus.
Yes,
like,
exactly. Thank you.
Like,
he really did.
Suit,
Randy.
It's just like, Randy. Constantly talking shit to him.
It's like, oh, you like risks, do you?
Risks
with little army men? That's
God.
Cute.
Yeah,
How long are their fucking lunch breaks?
I don't know exactly.
I love that they also wanted some sort of military tabletop game, and what the art department settled on is we're going to take a bunch of like children's army men and dump them on a risk board.
Exactly.
You know?
It didn't even look right. It looks so strange. It's a really long game of Risk, and you're right, Josh, a really long lunch break.
Get this man a paintball gun.
Exactly. That's where he belongs.
He definitely has that vibe. Of course. Warrior, for sure.
So Locke is obsessed with the idea of going on this walkabout in the Australian outback. He shares this goal of his with a woman named Helen, who at first seems like it might be his girlfriend, but I think it's pretty much implied that this person is a sex worker, right?
Of
course.
Like a sex
worker.
Remember when people paid for dirty talk on their phones to the tune of $90 an hour? I heard that and I was just like, what the
fuck
world was this we were
living
in?
Do you have any open OnlyFans subscriptions going on?
Hey now. It's way more personal and they all love me, all right?
Those
are strong, actual relationships, y'all.
I'm working on getting one of their numbers.
Oh, boy. So what? Locke, he arrives in what? He arrives in Australia. He's going to go do the walkabout. And then the instructor, the lead, the guide tells him that he's not able to because of his quote-unquote condition. Locke is very, very upset by this. He's enraged. And in a moment that is the greatest reveal, we see that John Locke has been, he's a paraplegic. He's been in a wheelchair. He's been wheelchair-bound this entire time that we've been watching him. And only once the crash happened and he wakes up is he able to mysteriously walk now. And so, yeah, this instance of like profound tragedy is one of the happiest days of John Locke's life. Yeah.
They hide it so well hidden in the flashbacks. Yeah. Funny part of it, I guess, if you were watching it for the first time and had no idea, I could see now someone thinking, huh, they're doing a bit more like standard network coverage where everyone's sitting down in a medium shot for these flashbacks. They don't have the visual pop of like Kate's flashback where there are car chases and just more like shallow focus photography and stuff like that. It's pretty much all just like locked down static shots. Everybody's in place. And of course, that totally sets up this reveal where he pulls back and the camera pulls back with him and reveals the wheelchair. And it's so brilliantly seated in there.
We got to talk about it, though. Yeah. Kind of a dick move on his part to be like, I'm going to show up, not tell them about the wheelchair. And like, y'all gotta cater to me. And it's like, dude, do you see the buses they're working with? How are you gonna get up there? You're like, yeah, you gotta carry me around for this whole time. It's like, dude, hey, maybe if you can't do the thing that's right in the fucking title, like, don't be so fucking put on when they're like, hey, you should have told us about this. We can't really make concessions. And he's like, fuck you, man. Yeah. He's like, it's never impeded me before. It's like, dude, it is right now.
Right.
Welcome to being impeded. And obviously, it's a tragedy. But it's like, you know, I mean, come on, take a little bit of responsibility, Mike.
Yeah, he's like, I'm going to need two Sherpas for this one. Like, what the fuck, man?
I want to go on a layabout.
Right?
I had never considered that, but that is a very good point.
Not to mention it.
What do you think about Terry O'Quinn?
Oh, he fucking rules.
Yeah.
I mean, he was one of those guys where you might have seen him and stuff, but you had no context for him as a person.
He's been in everything.
So when he shows up as Locke, he can just be this blank slate, this tabula rasa that you can project menace onto, that you can project heroism onto, and he plays all of it so well.
This guy, I mean, just looking at his credits, I was like, this guy has been in everything during the 80s and the 90s. He has a face for everything, I feel. I think that's just going to your point, Alex. Like, he can be menacing. He can be very fatherly and very protective. And I think that just speaks to the range that he's got as an actor.
Yeah, it is typified in probably his only leading role before Lost 2, which is in the horror film The Stepfather, where the entire point of the movie is that he's this con man murderer who shows up and takes on the guise of a stepfather or...
I heard he's funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I haven't seen it either. But he's just a guy who can fluidly move into any authority figure role, essentially. And he shows up and he looks in the mirror and says, who am I here? You know, and he has to remember. It's kind of, the perfect role for a character actor who can just blend in and do anything.
I would love to move my fluids into any authority role. Damn.
I'm all about the fluids.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, what he brings is gravitas. What he brings is this world weariness that does not feel put upon. You know, a lot of, I feel like these people are growing into these characters as they start the show. There's a few people, I think Walt's dad.
Harold Perrineau.
I think from the jump, he's pretty great.
Yeah,
but Locke really comes in. It's like it's almost like he's been inhabiting this character for a long time.
Right. He's not bringing an Ian Somerhalder energy to it of like, what am I doing?
Oh, is that Boone?
Yeah, that's Boone.
All right, Boone Bar, Boone
Sandbar. Oh, no.
Right. Boone, who looks like he fell out of a network sitcom and landed on this beach.
How do you sell this show without an Abercrombie model doing nothing in the background?
That's right. That's a good point.
He's so out of place.
He really is.
So Alex was talking about something last night. It's like we were watching, you know, they got the dog.
Yeah.
Locke finds a dog,
yeah.
And, you know, this dog is running around. And then
Vincent,
Alex,
played by Madison, by the way.
Oh.
Maria requested that I look that up.
Thank you.
Alex pointed out that he's like, oh, it's probably a girl dog. And we're like, why? It's like, because you can't have these like great shots and just have some red rocket in the background. And that, now I was picturing every time they're just having an intense conversation. He's just trotting in the background. They rack focus to him. And he's got this little red rocket hanging out.
Just in a wide shot where everyone's like looking really somber at the funeral. And there's just Vincent with a red rocket like right up front. And it's like, well, we can't fucking edit this out, you know? Just put the Giacchino score over and we'll be fine.
They just start wrapping green screen fabric around it.
Right, right. Yeah. So, yes. They used a female dog, so they of course. Didn't have to shoot around the dick.
I'm sorry, are you afraid to say what they're called?
I didn't even think of that. They used a real bitch on this set, let me tell you.
And I'm not talking about Terry O'Quinn.
Oh.
I wasn't going to say gay, because then that's just mean.
No.
And that's not an appropriate joke. And then we're not making those kind of jokes.
She's a very wonderful person who would love to date me.
It sounds like...
God, Alex. Just... Go get a drink of water, my dude.
So,
he's been drinking his empty cup of coffee. I know, like, yeah. Every time he yep. makes
it. Oh, okay.
All right, so I think now's a good time to talk about it. You want to just...
Yeah, exactly. This should be our podcast.
Yeah, there we go.
Let's have him mysteriously replaced for the next episode.
Yeah. So, this episode was written by David Fury, who is... a pretty crucial figure, I feel like, in the early story of Lost. Basically, the deal with him, he got his start as a TV writer in animation. He jumped over to Buffy the Vampire Slayer. He wrote freelance scripts for the second and third season, and then he was promoted up to a staff writer and then an executive producer pretty quickly after that. And he actually... was like co-showrunner by the end, and also was co-showrunner on the last season of Angel. But that's definitely where he made his mark, you know, working in the Whedonverse. Following that, he came on to Lost, and he wrote some really big episodes. He wrote the first flashbacks for Locke, Saeed, Hurley. I mean, major characters getting established here. And, like, the wheelchair twist did come from Lindelof. That was absolutely...
okay.
His original concept that came up in like an early brainstorming session, but Fury definitely put his mark on this show and then was fired before the end of the first season.
Really?
In a fairly like acrimonious situation.
Wow.
Yeah. And he was the first guy to come out publicly and say, the writers don't know where this story is going.
We needed confirmation.
Oh, I mean, at the time, people were very invested, and people were shook when that original article from David Fury hit. It was about, like, midway through season two that he dropped this, and he said, look, they have no idea, episode to episode, what's going on, and all I was trying to do was make it seem like it meant something.
Wow.
And so there was a lot of shade thrown, clearly a lot of bad blood there. He went on to have a big career, though. After Lost, he jumped on to 24 in season 5, which was a noticeable uptick in quality for that show. Basically where it like lost the last vestiges of being a real-time concept and just became like an action show. But, you know, it was good for at least a season or two on that. He worked on Fringe, again, with J.J. Abrams, so I guess they were still cool at least. He wrote episodes of Homeland and Hannibal.
Hannibal.
He's worked on a lot of good shit.
All right.
Yeah. Well, that's the real one.
No
yeah.
kidding.
I, that is,
what a show.
I, that is a TV show that I will always go to bat for.
Dude.
Absolutely.
Yeah, come on for Hannibal season
yeah,
two, man.
Man. Oh.
I will come on.
You and Will Graham both.
You just wanted to work that in, didn't you, Josh? You asked before we started.
Some of those Green Knight ropes.
Oh, man. So we didn't even talk about Terry O'Quinn. We might as well. Great actor.
Oh, yeah.
Great repertoire.
Very good.
Trusted, solid, you know, solid actor. I like this guy.
You love a bald
I
kid,
do.
You know?
I
you know
do.
Alex does.
That's why Alex is a good friend of mine.
I feel the representation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So he's like, I mean, what? He's a Michigan native and then ended up landing in Baltimore to just, like, do theater work. Got his first on-screen role in Michael Cimino's Heaven's Gate, which is apparently one of the worst films ever made. Never seen it before.
I don't think it carries that reputation. I think it carries a reputation of being the biggest disaster. It's gotten a pretty hefty critical reevaluation.
Okay.
It's just one of those movies that changed how movies were made. It was when they were like, we can't be doing this epic shit anymore. You know what I mean?
It's the movie that kind of killed the 70s because it was completely financed by United Artists, who were the artist studio, the director's absolute like hands-off
Started by Charlie Chaplin and others.
Right. And moving through into the 70s, they were just the epicenter of the new Hollywood movement. And then Heaven's Gate came out, which cost, I think, if you were to convert the money to today's dollars, I think Heaven's Gate cost like $400 million or something like that.
What?
So that movie by itself completely bankrupted
United Artists.
And kind of killed the 70s.
So it's not necessarily like the content of the film. It's just the fact that it was a disaster in the like just in making and producing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Production went forever. He fired tons of actors. Many people have said that there is a cut of that movie that is really great and that is basically not like anything else. You know, I think it's it's gained an appreciation just for being this insane edifice of total artistic freedom. And it did kill his career.
It was like $150
million. Oh, okay.
Like, but then you got to factor in, you know, advertising them trying to recoup.
Right. Man, what else? So like what? O'Quinn, he works on like a number of like TV shows and movies. So he's in L.A. Law. He's in Tombstone, Miami Vice, Remington Steele. He's in The Rocketeer,
Remington
Roswell.
Steel.
Dude, I live for some Remington Steele, son. Exactly. Which reminds me, I've got a question for you at some point, Alex. So he's perhaps like best known, obviously, for the Stepfather horror series. And then when he was in Lost, he got nommed for 2 Emmys in 2005 and 2010. Since then, I think he's got just as many credits post-Lost as he does pre-Lost. Like, he's just had steady work ever since then and has not stopped, which is cool. Like, it's always good, I think, to see people who had, like, they're the peak or the pinnacle of their career and they're still doing, like, good work elsewhere.
He's from that generation of character actors where, like, you can always bring them in and know you're going to get a solid performance.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have many like that. I think, I don't know if it was you I was talking about, but it's like, I can think Barry Keoghan might be the only, like, character actor like coming up on the scene that we have right now.
He's like, such an exciting actor though. It's like, when's he gonna break into a lead role?
Yeah,
you know? I almost don't want him to though. And so I think that's kind of where Terry O'Quinn fits in.
He's a worker.
Yes,
he's unpretentious about it. They asked him about the casting process. He basically said, Abrams came to me and said, we got this network show and it shoots in Hawaii. And he said, great, what time do you want me there?
Exactly.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, you're saying that like that's a huge ask.
Yeah, but I get how he was just like, any acting job, whatever.
I'm going
like,
to take it. I'll do
whatever
it.
I don't have to read this.
It's like when I hit up somebody, I'm like, you want to light my thing for free? It's like, no. You get to go to Hawaii and become famous and get a lot of money. It's like, oh, boom.
We, at one point, I think last season, talked about, it might have been this season. No, it was last season. We talked about things that are Philcore. What was it? What's the name of that movie?
Oh,
J.C. Shander,
A Most Violent Year
is Philcore.
Yeah,
so I was trying to think.
Because it sounds like this lurid, awesome crime thriller, and it's actually an incredibly sad movie about like people suffering from depression, and then there's like one weird act of violence,
whatever.
Like an hour.
Yeah, okay. What's Alex Core though?
I would say that only like hornier and bloodier.
Exactly. Alex Core is something with a. Probably a female lead.
Yeah.
By a pervert. And
this is Leon the Professional.
Exactly. He's got that tattooed on his back. You know?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Alex Core is also shit that nobody's ever
seen.
Like, TV shows, I think, a lot of times. It's like, you can ask, like, how many USA shows have you watched? Probably a good bit, right?
No.
You haven't been burned by the notice?
I have not received my word. No, I'm still waiting for that one in the mail. I feel like Sicario is Alex Core. It's awesome female lead in unspeakably disgusting situations that are beautifully lit and shot.
So it's like when a woman comes over to your apartment.
Right, exactly. It's like Sicario 2, Day of the Soldado, aka
she walks in and she's like, Alex, where are you? And you burst out of the wall in a bag.
Don't worry, I'm wearing the bag over my head. It's okay.
But could you pull it tighter for me? I will be asking you to do that later.
Alright, so you're thinking Sicario. That's what you're going for?
Yeah.
That's respectable.
Yeah, I think so. Very, like, stripped-down crime. Like, essentially, like, take all of the extreme elements of crime and then cut out, like, 70% of the dialogue.
Okay. All right, fine.
I mean, Drive is another one.
Drive, yeah, that was where I'm at. I thought it was, like, between... I didn't even think of Sicario, but I definitely thought Drive and or Mad Max Fury Road.
I mean,
but that's my core though, too, though, because it's also
that's also Josh
core, because Josh core is goofy shit layered on top of an amazing genre piece. Like, he loves it when it just gets a little bit weird, a little bit off kilter, and you're like, this guy's making choices. Like, if you say that about a director, it's probably Josh core.
All right, yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Brazil's my favorite.
Oof.
That is just a choice basket, right there.
I just had a lot of fun with the new Resident Evil movie in theaters. Like, Josh core is anything and everything. If you're taking yourself too seriously and you don't hit the mark, then it's not Josh core.
And you don't hit the mark, then that's not Josh core?
Green Knight is not Josh core, yeah.
Okay, because it took it. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I don't think it's any of our cores.
Honestly, it might be Phil core. Yeah. I think it is.
So are you like movies to nap?
No, I just like ones that, you know, you might be a little bit there. You might be there. You might be a little bit elsewhere at the same time when you're watching that film.
Philcore is your eyelids just droop involuntarily, not full nap. It's like your vision is just getting a little cloudy, you know.
I have to see that movie again to see how I feel about it. I feel like it needs a rewatch and evaluation on my part, at least.
I thought the same thing, and then I thought, well, maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe never again.
Maybe nope. Yeah.
Oh, I guess the last person we got to talk about is just Jack Bender, who directed both of these episodes and directed more episodes of Lost than anybody else. Huge, huge television director. And
it's like Jerry Garcia.
Yeah, he does kind of. Yeah. But he got his start actually as an actor. He was in network sitcoms like All in the Family. He was in the Mod Squad. He usually played like the hippie. And he said it wasn't especially fulfilling for him. He felt like he was never a very good actor, but he really liked the directing side of it. And starting in the 1980s, he became a television director. He did a bunch of TV movies. His first feature was Child's Play 3, actually, in 1991.
I haven't seen that one.
It's the boring one, honestly.
Really? Because I just don't like Child's Play.
It's like most Child's Play movies in that it has one good sequence. So, anyway, the same year that he did Child's Play 3, he also directed some episodes of David Chase's show, I'll Fly Away. Apparently the two became friends on set, and that's how he got brought back into The Sopranos for season 3. But by that point, he was also just like a pretty major television director. He was directing a bunch of Alias with J.J. Abrams. And, just very successful. Directed episodes of Boston Public, Ally McBeal, Carnival, Game of Thrones. He directed the episode The Door, which was
A big deal. Yeah.
Lots of crying.
He's directed a lot of therapy shit that after I've never that. Even come close to watching.
Yeah. He also directed an episode of The Lion's Den.
Put
a pin in that for later.
Oh, yes.
We might have to watch
The Lion's Den. Oh, I totally will.
On air.
Rob Lowe. Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, boy.
Rob Lowe and Kyle Chandler.
Really?
Right before Friday Night
Lights. Oh, wow. Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Chandler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's great.
And most recently, he directed almost every single episode of Mr. Mercedes. So super hard
work. We're all watching all the time.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's on the Audience Network. Yeah. Hey, that amazing non-existent
there's
network.
There's a thing called Audience Network?
It doesn't exist anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
With Mr. Mercedes, you would think that it's tapping in a gold mine.
Yeah. HBO just like extracted Mr. Mercedes from the Audience Network as if it was like a reverse tumor to healthy
there
tissue
was some other
situation.
Thing. What was it? Like, you know? The Mr. In-Between or something? Is that a show on like FX?
Yeah. Mr. In-Between. It's
good.
On FX.
I'm good with these Mr. shows.
It's actually supposed to be awesome, that one.
All right.
I need to start watching
it. Oh, yeah.
I love FX shows, man.
They're pretty good.
I mean,
they're
John
solid.
Landgraf is such a good...
I like Atlanta. The first season of Legion. Yeah. I like the first two seasons of Fargo.
Yeah. Season two of Fargo. We're definitely...
Yes.
...podcasts, man.
Cool. Definitely.
I've seen that twice.
I've watched it multiple times. It's so good. Yeah. That's one of my favorite
TV shows
of all
time.
That's
what you gotta do with a show. You have to really be fucking with the form for me to, like, stay locked in, I feel like.
So, power rankings?
Sure. Yeah.
That's okay.
You got some power
Oh, I do.
Loaded up?
Yeah, I've got some. Oh, you want me to go first?
You go right ahead.
Can y'all explain to me how this works?
You make up your own rules.
Oh, okay, cool.
You can do them based off of characters, if that's just like the easiest way to do it. That's the standard way to do power rankings. And then Alex got a little deviant with it, because that's just who he is. And yeah, don't follow his example. All right, so I'll go with mine first. Mine are based on just like all the ways you could possibly die within the first four episodes of Lost ranked. So we've got at 5 being impaled by a shard of metal, 4 boars, 3 botched mercy killing, 2 polar bears, 1 mysterious island dinosaur.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Of course, we gotta go with the monster at number 1 again.
There you go. Yep.
He's just gonna be ruling the charts in general.
Absolutely.
On this.
All right, what are yours?
So, I will go at number 5 with flashbacks that reveal the origin of tattoos or other body modifications.
Mm-hmm.
At number 4, I'll go with flashbacks that reveal things that we already know about the characters, such as their heroin addictions.
Mm-hmm.
At number 3, I'm going to go with flashbacks that start slow, and then by the end reveal exactly one thing about a character.
Okay.
Such as Kate's flashback, for example.
Mm-hmm.
At number 2, I'm going to go with flashbacks that are just pure action. You just throw a lot of noise, a lot of sound and fury into there. And then at number 1, I'm going to go with flashbacks that reveal something totally fundamental about not just a character, but the entire fucking show. A flashback that reveals that you are actually watching a fantasy show in addition to science fiction, which is, I feel like what happens at the end of Walkabout is it opens up the genres of the show so much where it's like, not only do we have a potential like robot dinosaur lurking around in the jungle, but now we actually have magic on this island.
Miracles can occur, right?
Yeah, yeah. Either a miracle or some technology sufficiently advanced to appear to be magic.
Exactly.
You know?
Okay.
So
I like these.
That would just be it. Just the way that the show is completely redefined in that moment is part of the twist.
Yeah.
Not just that it's a twist for the character, but that it's a twist of like, oh, you're watching something that's more expansive than you had ever thought before.
Okay.
I feel like that's where we all got so fucking jazzed on this season, man. Even more than the pilot. Like, Walkabout is what confirmed for us that we were going to stick with this show till the finale.
Josh, what do you got?
All right. With no sort of binding, like, ethos at all.
Yeah, of course.
This is, All right. So first, my power ranking, I guess, well, let's start with 5 or 4 and work back down. We got breasts and Michael's reaction to seeing breasts, which is, I would call incel at best.
He drops all of his spaghetti, dude.
Yeah.
It's
wild.
He stands there for like 5 minutes trying to hand her a shirt.
It's like,
and like
yeah.
I know you
what
fucked
are you doing,
before.
Man. I know you
it's
fucked
so
before.
Awkward.
And then he has the audacity to ask them to watch his kid. But hey, kind of a power move. All right. That man,
I don't like how this power ranking started. I'm going to be honest. All right.
The man in the suit who's like, you see briefly.
That's right.
You're like, what's this guy's deal?
So is your power ranking just like partial reveals? Is that what's going on?
Okay, actually, yes. So it's partial. That's exactly what it is.
That's exactly what it is.
Okay, the next is Locke's big toe.
Yes.
Okay,
I've never seen a more like intrigue from somebody shaking their big toe.
Aside from in a Quentin Tarantino movie, obviously.
Dude, did you come up with that line of criticism? That's crazy. And then number 1 is the guys who shake the trees off camera. Like the guys who are down on the floor shaking the trees. That is the show's biggest fucking asset. They should have been paid more than the director.
You're right. Okay. That just makes me think really quickly. It's just like how I think the first 4 episodes don't really do a great job of using the environs as... You're in Hawaii. It looks lush. It looks great. It's a wonderful, beautiful place. And they managed to not capture that in the way that other shows did, like White Lotus. Like, White Lotus makes Hawaii look gorgeous.
And
luscious
menacing.
And delicious. And menacing.
In Walkabout, when Locke is going off on his own, there's a lot of really good, kind of like, long lens shots of him walking through these tall grass. It is very
There's cool. one I remember, yeah.
And you know, I almost listed 35mm film in my, like, power rankings, because that makes this show so nice to watch. It is
yeah.
Ooh. Even when they're like pushing the stock unfairly far and it looks grainy and a little blown out, I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Larry Fong is doing a great job still.
Fong of his work. So what's up, Phil? What do you think we should talk about next? Are we wrapping up?
No, I think we're about to do Name That Episode.
It is about that time.
It's about that time to see if I can humiliate Alex. Here we go.
Feel free to jump in if you know one of these.
Oh, no. Josh is not going to get to help you. No. You have to endure this humiliation on your own, sir. Let's see.
Let's go.
So this is a two-thirds Terry O'Quinn themed Name That Episode. Yeah, I decided to go a little bit special this time. All right, so here we go. Terry O'Quinn starred in this season 7 episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, which was written by Ronald D. Moore and directed by LeVar Burton. During the episode, the Enterprise attempts to recover a Federation starship in possession.
Called the Pegasus.
Get out of here. Just get out of here. It's a, yeah, good job.
It's a new transwarp, transcloaking drive, rather, on an Oberth's class.
What was that? Do you want to say that again?
It gets just trapped inside of a rock.
Oh, okay.
It gets like phased into an asteroid, basically. It's a great episode.
I don't think I want to hang out with this anymore.
That hermetically sealed it for you?
Yeah. Exactly. God.
That was good.
Oh,
tag me
boy.
And tag me.
Bring
yeah,
me
I know.
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Number 2.
Fantastic.
This season 9 episode of The X-Files focuses on the investigations of John Doggett, Dana Scully, and Monica Reyes. While Mulder remains in hiding, Terry O'Quinn makes a guest appearance as the Shadow Man.
Oh, man. Dude, season 9, bro. That's fucking brutal. I don't think I've ever even seen every episode of season 9.
Mm.
Oh, man. Is it called, like, Trust No One with one as a...
He did it, ladies and gentlemen!
What?!
He did it! Yes, he did it! Good job.
Oh my god. Josh is shaking his head over here. He's face-palming the fuck out, dude.
This is how he does it every single time. I don't know how Alex does this. All right, so those were the two...
I know how.
Right, those were two Terry O'Quinns. Yeah, those were the two Terry O'Quinns. All right, so last one. Here we go. This second episode of the third season of Buffy was directed by James Whitmore and written by Marty Noxon. In this episode, Buffy struggles with life back in Sunnydale, and an ancient Nigerian mask acquired by Joyce summons an army of zombies.
Oh, is it Dead Man's Party?
Did it again. 3 for 3.
Oh my
Crushed
god.
Crushed it.
Fuck yeah.
3 for 3.
Guess what you win?
An inability to relate to people.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I win.
Oh my gosh. Any final thoughts on either of these episodes?
Walkabout's great. If it could sustain that sense of intrigue and payoff, I would have kept watching past the third season.
Ooh.
But the moment I see those motherfuckers in like cages, I'm out.
See, Josh is a classic fell off early in season 3. He made a rookie mistake because season 3 actually culminates in probably the best final batch of episodes.
Oh man.
So you fell off just a little too early.
My rookie mistake is not wasting hours of my life. What a rookie mistake. I went out and found love and like
rookie mistakes, all of the above.
How are you, Alex? Any final thoughts?
Oh man. Yeah, I mean, watching it again, you appreciate the craft, but I just have to bring myself back to that time in 2004 when this episode absolutely blew my mind and when we all just could not stop talking about this fucking show, man. It was so exciting, and Walkabout was really the hinge point. The pilot was so great, but I think we were all waiting through Tabula Rasa to see, like, all right, are they going to be able to, like, keep this formula going? And Walkabout was where they said, oh no, we're expanding this so much further than you ever thought. And maybe that was a bit of false promises here and there. You know, you hear from David Fury certain things later, but this episode just reminds me of how exciting it was to really be getting into this show. What about you?
Yeah, I kind of feel the same as both of you. It's a great episode. I think it's great to see the first iteration of the flashback formula that they're eventually going to be using for every single episode just about. I do like Tabula Rasa quite a bit. I don't know what it is, but I think that's a great episode. It's a good, solid episode, I think, to have after a pilot. And then for Walkabout to come immediately on the tails is fantastic, just to like really boost the momentum, I think. Because the next episode after that is kind of a drain. And so, yeah, it is good to start the season. It's good to start a season with two solid episodes. So, yeah, it definitely brings back a lot of the magic of watching it the first time. I agree.
For sure, man. Hey, just got to thank you again for coming on the podcast, Josh. We so appreciate it. Everybody, check out the Murray video when that drops. And yeah, man, thank you so much for doing our intro music.
Yeah, man.
Too. It's a fucking bop. It gets me excited to listen back to this podcast because, I listen to all people.
That's fun. It originally was designed to be the opener for a friend's like stand-up special, and I wanted to make the most annoying thing I could. And y'all were like, we love it.
We can't wait to put this on every episode before 5 minutes of non-sequitur bullshit. So yeah, man, gotta thank you for that. Gotta thank Janice O'Leary for our artwork. Gotta thank Battle Quick for our outro music. If you have questions, please email us at goatseasonpod@gmail.com or hit us up on the Instagram at goatseasonpod. We have posts, sweet goat pictures. We got interactive activities on there, fucking coloring books. I don't even know what else. And we'll see you next week. Peace.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.